Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by James Dowse.
Thank you for doing me first, Scott.
Of course, always. And Josh Brown.
I've been mugged off big time. Right. Little do the people listening here know that we already did one take of this introduction where I was introduced first.
The real first contender.
We go for the second take. Yeah. And it wasn't even my fault, and yet
I know
bears the brunt. Hello, Scott Tilford.
I slipped him a tenner. I slipped you a tenner. That's why you said my name
Please
first.
Do. Yeah. Slip me all the things. Speaking of slipping me all the things, no relation to what I'm going to go with this, but it's Game of the Year season, I feel, because we're halfway there towards the overall Games of the Year 2022. So we thought we'd do some categories for the halfway mark, including our personal Games of the Year, most disappointing, most underrated, slash hidden gem, best gaming moment of the year so far, and our most anticipated for the rest of the year. Now, I just think we'll dive in with the obvious elephant in the room, and then we'll talk about the rest of the stuff as we go, which is to say that Elden Ring is absolutely dominating the discussions later in the year. It'll dominate all the Game of the Year so far stuff. And we kind of knew it when that game dropped. It hasn't really been an energy around a game since like Breath of the Wild, where it was immediate. It was like, this is clearly going to be Game of the Year. Now, it's not my personal Game of the Year. I think it kind of is, to be honest. But it's so obvious that I want to find something else that it gets up there, but nothing else is close.
I was genuinely shocked that you didn't put Sifu on as your, I always get that mixed up.
I don't know, no one's ever called it Sifu. It sounds cooler.
You know when you get something in your head, when you see something like written down and then you pronounce it? Yeah, Dark Side.
Dark Seed?
Yeah, then you pronounce it in your head and then you get told the correct way and yet you still pronounce it the incorrect way. Anyway,
Jules called him Geralt for about 5 years.
I've played The Witcher 3 like hundreds of hours. Play The Witcher 2, love watching videos on it, still go to a voiceover booth and go Geralt.
Geralt and Jennifer.
It's not their name. What was I going to say? Yeah, Sifu. I've done it again. Doesn't matter. That game, I'm surprised that you haven't got as your number one.
Well, so I wrote some stuff down. I put Elden Ring brackets ofs, and then because that's just a foregone conclusion, which I think you guys should talk about Elden Ring a little bit more than me. And then I also just threw down some other ones. So my other ones were Sifu, Triangle Strategy, and I put Pokemon Arceus down. But we can get back to them because, I mean, also for just to reel everything off and we'll get back to stuff. Josh, your other games of the year were Horizon Forbidden West. You had Sifu on here as well and Tunic. And then Mr. James Dowse, you just put Elden Ring,
Couldn't think of any more.
How big of a deal that game is.
How perfect that game was.
Exactly. We should talk about Elden Ring pretty much taking it. Like, do you think this will be the game of the year when more outlets start weighing in?
I think there's only really God of War Ragnarok that might be able to face off against it. Coming out for the rest of the year. And that is certainly a contender. Mm-hmm. However, I do think it will just go to Elden Ring, but I kind of want to hear from James Dowse because this is like your clear favorite. Like, you didn't have any other alternatives down. What makes this like the game of the year in your eyes to the point where it is uncontested at the moment?
So, when I think of Elden Ring, I didn't want to go into it because it's a Souls game and I'd never played a Souls game before. Mm-hmm. And then I played it and then, holy moly, it got me involved. And now no game has ever made, because I guess Souls is a genre in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's made me want to buy every other Souls game. And like this week, I actually bought 1 through 3 because they're on sale on PlayStation at the minute.
Nice.
And I was just like, no game has ever made me want to get involved with an entire franchise before, more than Elden Ring has. Mm-hmm. And now I want to play Sekiro. I want to play, what else is it? Bloodborne.
There's Bloodborne
too. You know, there's so
many
games.
Yeah, you got the Demon's Souls remake and stuff if you want that. It's a hell of a thing, because I think that whenever anyone goes through a Souls game, whatever your first Souls game is, tends to be your favorite. Like, I still adore Dark Souls 1, because that was my first one. I think there's something about exploring that world and those systems and putting up with all the BS and then overcoming it and everything that really sticks with you. However, I do think Elden Ring is like the mecca of everything from software have made so far. Like, it is an astonishing accomplishment. It's just one of those games where I look at it, I had a phenomenal time with it. It's one of those things where it is an immaculate version of Dark Souls in an open world, done so well, but I kind of just wanted a little bit more from it for it to be my personal game of the year. That's not really to knock it, though. I do think it is worthwhile as game of the year, but Josh, why is it up there for you?
Because I had the exact same feeling I had playing it as I did playing Red Dead Redemption 2, where in the moment I thought, this is great, and the more I played, the more memories I banked almost, the more I realized it was something special. And now, months away from it, like, it's still all I want to think about and all I want to talk about. You know, I put 120-ish hours into the main campaign for my first run, and then I went and did all of the New Game Plus and New Game Plus Plus to get the Platinum trophies. And then I was so ecstatic when you two were like, I need help beating a boss. I was like, I will jump in. I'm not sick of this game. I want to consume more. I just think, yes, obviously it is building off the games that came before, but it is using that accrued knowledge and experience to deliver something genre-defining, something potentially generational, generation-defining. And it is, no matter how many people hype it up or how high your expectations are, I think it meets it as long as you're prepared to meet it in regards to its mechanics and like how demanding it is. I think as long as you understand what you're getting into, like James Dowse did, you know, it opens your eyes not only to this game, but an entire subgenre of games now.
I think as well, like the way, if I talk about, like, I always get so up my own a-hole about how, like, new ideas that games have. And like, I think it's easy to look at this and go, oh, you know, that's just trading the Dark Souls formula. It's another Dark Souls thing. However, the real new thing that this does, I think, is in the map reveals, is in the way that they treat them, like the literal map reveal, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger every time, and how every little part of the little semblances of narrative that are in here all overlap with each other anyway, and you're moving NPCs around the world. Maybe you trigger something in one place that moves someone somewhere else, and you find out later that you actually set that thing in motion like 50 hours later or something. And the fact that I was able to find the underworld, like the whole realm or whatever of Nokron in like 10 minutes, and then you found it after like 50 hours, and it's like stuff like that where you can just stumble into these insane secrets that are so rewarding. And like, I love all the multiplayer stuff. I love the drop-in, drop-out stuff. I love the summoning. And like, yeah, you helped me on like a lunch break once where you just beamed in and helped me beat a boss. And we'll talk more about that stuff later. But all those things are why it is an incredible package overall.
One of my, when I know a game is special, it's when I enjoy talking about it to friends as much as I do playing it. And there are a handful of games that's happened with in the past, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2, like I said, Death Stranding. And this was one of those. Like, I didn't want to talk about it initially because of spoilers. I didn't want that spoiled. But after we all completed it, I loved talking to you, Scott, about how you stumbled across that underworld thing, you know, really quickly. I loved talking to you, Dowse, about how you spent like a week of your life trying to beat the Elden Beast, you know, stuff like that. Those stories.
Didn't we all?
Like, so personalized, despite it obviously being a game and everyone getting the same content. No two people, I think, get the same through-line experience of that game, and that's just incredible.
Yeah.
See, I've not had a game where I couldn't wait to... I think it was you I messaged first, where when I first beat Margit, was that the first boss?
Yeah. Yes.
I messaged you. I'd never once been like, I need to tell somebody.
Right, yeah.
After a game moment... And that was it.
But it's because it feels like genuine achievement. I think that's like, they put you in such a specific pocket. And obviously, like, you know, they've been trying this stuff for a long time. Demon Souls 2009. They want to put you in a pocket of like, oh my God, this is so annoying and infuriating and whatever. And over the years, they've gone back and forward on how much do they help you overcome this stuff. And obviously in Elden Ring, you know, you can always summon people in, but in Elden Ring, they'll give you the summons themselves, like NPC AI summons to help you. But it's still quite hard. And like, it's still a very like tough game. And obviously you can get more used to it if you've played the other games and stuff, but I think that they nailed that little pocket they put you in where it's just infuriating to a point, but you have so many options, but it still feels like you're overcoming something, and it still feels like a personal achievement. I think that's why all this stuff works to like a next level degree. Like, you're not just, you know, beating a boss, you're kind of getting better as like a person, as a player or something. It's like, well, I managed to do that. Like, it's a literal personal achievement. So I think that stuff all elevates it. In terms of other things to throw in here, we should talk about Sifu because it's on me and Josh's list. What was it about about Sifu for you that knocked it up? Because I've talked a lot about Sifu.
I think it was just the tightness of the production, essentially. Mm. You know, I was playing that during Horizon Forbidden West, which is also on my shortlist there. Cheers. And it was good enough to make me stop the latest Sony AAA blockbuster game so I could just live and breathe Sifu for a little bit. And I just think there is a tightness, a certain sense of polish to that game that makes it this, like, just, like, fighty little package.
It's like, you know, learning a martial art. It's so strong.
Yeah, like the learning curve of it generally is great to master. Like the depth to it is incredible. Like the level design is really striking. I just think that's a great little game you can give anyone who's a fan of action and go, enjoy this, you know, enjoy this for 15 hours or more if you want, have a go at that.
You know, and it is like really tough and unrelenting, but like it does make you just think like, okay, just literally study the animations, like a Soulsian lesson. Like it's okay, what is coming at you? What are your options? Can you duck it? Can you jump over something? Can you use a weapon? Can you do whatever? Like you do get better the more you kind of relax and feel it through. And it is like learning a martial art or learning an instrument and like learning to let go of frustration and all that kind of stuff. And I think that it only pays off the more you play it. Like I've played through that game a lot, and like there's all the hidden story stuff that's in there. I've mentioned all these in older podcasts and everything, but I think as a refined package it only rewards you the more time you put into it. And Slow Clap have put a lot more content out there as well. There's some extra skins, there's some other arena modes, and there's more stuff coming out across the summer and everything. So yeah, Sifu I think might be some outlets game of the year, and it's the thing that's the closest to my personal game of the year. It's just that it doesn't fully blow me away like Elden Ring does. But yeah, the other things I had down with Triangle Strategy, just want to quickly shout that out as literally the best written RPG under the Square Enix banner in like, I don't even know, like 20 years, like a single player thing. It's just been so long, and I think that game does a great job of melding Game of Thrones style setup, like factions and all this different, all the wars that are going on, all the different, you know, different wants and needs of all these different people and all the backstabbing that goes on. It's very Thronesy with a really cool, tight, grid-based combat system. I just want to shout that thing out. I think it's incredible. That was my COVID game. That's what I lived on when I had Big Vid. And so I want to shout that out. Pokemon Arceus, I've got down as an incredible time. Oh. Mr. James Dowston, a sharp inhale, though.
It's a agree, but carry on.
I mentioned that specifically because I don't think you had it down as your most disappointed or anything.
No.
But I mean, the thing is, I initially did have it on my most disappointing. I said to Josh before we were recording, it would be funny if I had it on my Game of the Year list and most disappointing.
Yeah.
Because it is incredibly disappointing. The textures look horrendous. Yeah. That game was very much kicked out the door before Game Freak had time to sort of really spend any time in the environment. But I do love what they did deliver. And I think it's an incredible set of gameplay loops that just took me over for a few days.
That's
I have over 100
I didn't
hours.
I put it on my disappointed one because I appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's like old school, you know, like sort of feudal Japan, Edo period Japan with Pokemon. It's just a great visual combo. But yeah, so those are all the Game of the Year stuff. Although, Mr. JB, you had Tunic.
Oh, yes. Oh, cheeky little Tunic. I just want to shout that out again because, you know, since finishing that game, it has left a warmth in my heart.
It is a beautiful game.
It's absolutely one of the games that will surprise me the most this year, no doubt. Like, it's that isometric classic RPG style that I don't usually go for. Action-adventure with a little sweet little fox in a nice little tunic, you know, with a sword and a shield and stuff, and it's great. But there's just a sort of depth and complexity to that game that I loved. It is way more than meets the eye, and I know that's a bit of a cliche in journalistic terms. I've definitely overused that in the past myself, but this one definitely justifies that phrase because it just keeps getting deeper and deeper the more you scratch at the surface, quite literally in terms of the level design, but also in the secrets that are in that world. And I just think that if you like that type of game, like, you absolutely need to play it.
I think it's a game for gamers as well. Like, if you grew up with instruction booklets and like old school, like the whole way the genres have formed over the years and the way that storytelling has evolved over the years, it's one of them. You're better off just going in not knowing very much about it and let it blow you away. I have a question though, JP. Has it turned your mind on animal protagonists? And will you be going forward enjoying all sorts of animal protagonists that usually you'd run away from?
Maybe, but also I might just kind of put them in a cage instead. No. And I would never do that to a real animal, but animal protagonists, like...
You take Ori out of that cage.
I will
right
not.
Now.
He is in the cage that is my cupboard, that is my Xbox digital archive, I'm afraid.
Can't stand it. 5 years in we are on me telling you to play Ori. I think that was the first time.
I think it was.
Back in the day, we should pivot into the most disappointing games of the year, though. Mr. JB, you had Dying Light 2. I had Ghostwire Tokyo and Horizon Forbidden West. And Mr. James Dowse, you had Gran Turismo 7 and Lego Star Wars. Let's talk about Lego Star Wars. That game was a whole mess of a thing.
So
it wasn't.
Mm. I think it was good. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. What was it? 9 games that fit into one
Yeah, 9 game saga in itself. Too.
But growing up with the originals back in, what, 2005 or so, I think the first one was? So when we was children, basically, mm-hmm. The games were great, but playing them now, I realise that I'm older. And it just feels like... The game is for kids, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I realise...
I love you realising this about Lego.
The ageing process.
It's for kids all along.
But, like, I'm playing it now and I'm just like, this is very easy, very bare bones and very just like, oh, a kid would love this.
Yes.
But not me.
I had a similar, like, equally ridiculous realisation because I think I like how much they've done with it. I like that if you play as a melee character, it has the Arkham combat. I like if you play as a blaster shooter character, they have a really, really simplified version of cover shooting.
Yep.
But even then, and again, it's because it's for 3-year-olds, but they aim assist too much. They make it so there's not really any challenge or anything tactile to really engage with. And the game nigh on plays itself, which the Lego games always did. So I can see where you're coming from. Yeah. I sort of got it going like, cool, they've actually made a game here. It's not just push buttons, but then it is a bit too simple. Probably insane to criticize a Lego Star Wars game for being for children, but just saying, if they're going to go down that route, and they could have fleshed it out a bit. Gran Turismo 7, where'd you come down on that?
That was very, once again, very up its own ass, I felt, that game. Can I say that?
Oh, can.
That's classic Gran Turismo, isn't it? Always.
Like the opening cutscene, what goes on for 50 years, where he's just saying about how Gran Turismo evolved and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just want to race. But
oh, I love that
the
stuff.
Thing, like, the actual racing though was stellar. Like it was great, and how it with the 3D audio, with the controller, with the haptics and stuff, phenomenal. But it was just dull. It really. I adore racing games. Like Forza Horizon is my favorite franchise currently. Motorsport, I played them all. Gran Turismo, I grew up with on PS2, and once again, there it felt cool to play it back then. But now it just feels like it's so.
It's very Top Gear.
Yeah, I don't know. It just
I know what you mean. It's very stuffy, but like
it just it loves itself, and it's just like you talk to people, like go to the cafe and talk to this fella. I'm like, no, I just want to race, man.
I know what you mean. It's like you know it will never do this because this is it's its own USP. But you kind of just want to go like loosen up, man. Like loosen up a bit. Let your hair down for once in a while. Gran Turismo, do something wild just once.
Yeah. Part of me does. I love that stuffiness, that whole cafe thing. I love how up their own arse they are because it is what distinguishes Polyphony from any other dev. But at the same time, we've almost been spoiled by how immediate Forza Horizon is and how like just incredibly fast. And like I said, it's immediate. Like in Forza Horizon's case, here's a supercar, here's some crazy stunts, here's all this stuff, and that's never what Gran Turismo was. But at the same time, like you said, if you just want to have a racing game, they're going to make you sit there and watch the entire... It's like waiting for the YouTube advert to finish before you can go to the next thing. It's like, you're going to have to sit and go through this before you can get to the main meat of it.
And that tutorial goes on for hours.
Oh, my God, all the license tests.
And it's not... this is a weird problem, but, like, music-wise, the original ones had, like, Feeder and... Feeder, I can't think of any more.
When you've got Just a Day, mate, you don't need anything
Just
else.
Just a Day, it had an amazing soundtrack. But this one, I don't even think it had a soundtrack.
The Cardigans on Gran Turismo 3?
Yeah. What did this have?
This had Bring Me the Horizon covering a song from the original Gran Turismo.
There you go.
But that's, I know what you mean, though, in terms of like how memorable those original ones were. This is the only one I've played since like GT4, I think. And I had fun with it, but I didn't keep on it. Like, I kept on Horizon for a bit. I think that game keeps you going with better loops and stuff.
I would like, I like Gran Turismo 7, you know, I gave it a good review, still stand by that, still jump into it now. I just think the problem with the franchise as a whole is that it takes so much time between games that I don't think is justified. Yeah. If we got games like this turned around quicker, if there was a shorter gap between Gran Turismo 5, Gran Turismo 6, Gran Turismo 7 and stuff, I think I'd be kinder to it, but you would just expect more when a franchise disappears for this amount of time. And I know they did support in between, they support that for a long time, but at least I do, you know, I expect more when a Gran Turismo game comes around. I expect it to be like cutting edge, and don't get me wrong, like James said, you know, there are a lot of great features, great next-gen features in this game, like the haptics, like the, you know, density of the car visuals, but then there are also a lot of things that let it down, like, you know, the graphics on the tracks or the textures on the audience and stuff. It's kind of just like, it's good, but you haven't justified the wait for me.
There was that weird thing as well where in the pre-release, and it is in the game, they were like thinking of ways to sort of do the next level of graphical technology, and it was Polyphony saying that they'd studied realistic cloud patterns so that wherever you were racing, it brings in the weather data or whatever. I was like, that's not going to mean anything to me racing a car. Like, it's cool you did it, but you're not a flight simulator. Like, I don't know.
With PlayStation's racing games, I think they should have just carried on with Drive Club.
Honestly,
Drive Club
yes.
was one of the best racing games I've ever played.
It's very solid. I had the weather effects and stuff. Yeah, I didn't play very much of that game. But yeah. No, not really. I like my racing games to be arcade racing games, or give me power-ups, give me something. Like, I love Wreckfest because it's like physics-based, but you can slam dudes off the corners when you fly around and they go pirouetting through like a sign and everything splinters apart. Give me that. Right. Or give me Burnout, or give me Inertial Drift or whatever. So the more realistic ones where it's like, you're just driving a Peugeot 206 around a court. Like, yeah, cool, but I've been doing this for 20 years. Like, I needed to have a little bit more to it.
Yeah.
So Forza Horizon kind of does that because it's more arcadey or whatever. But yeah, overall, though, Mr. Josh Brown, your most disappointing was Dying Light 2.
Oh, dude, I've just finished this recently. And even though I didn't play Dying Light 2 for a long time, obviously it came out in March or whenever it did, maybe even February. That was intentional because I wanted to give it the time of day. I didn't want to stuff it between Horizon and Elden Ring and all of those big games. I wanted to etch out some time and properly jump into it. And I have never regretted something more in my life than dedicating myself to this game. It's very Days Gone. In terms of what you're doing, but I don't think it's even on the level of Days Gone mechanically. So obviously with this sequel, it's been like 7 years since the last game, and they've essentially just tried to make it as big and as ambitious as possible, but in doing so, for me, it lost what made the original Dying Light so special, which was its identity and its kind of tightness in terms of its world design and how compact and dense it was. This time around, like, the world is so much bigger that you're not even doing the central thing all that much, which is, you know, parkouring and killing zombies. So much of the main story missions, so many of them, like, don't even concern zombies at all. You're just fighting dudes with like hammers, and it's like I'm playing Condemned,
so boring.
Criminal Origins, and it's the same kind of enemy types over and over again, and it just almost doesn't want to be like Dying Light. Like, you know, it's taken the base of the original game and it's tried to throw in Bethesda style RPG missions, like choices in the narratives, branching pathways, which faction will you join, and then on top of that, like I said, it kind of sidelines the zombies in the main campaign and makes you focus on like these human enemies who aren't all that interesting to fight, and it's just bogged down with so much stuff. The first one distinguished itself to me because it didn't feel like an Ubisoft open world, and this feels way more like an Ubisoft open world, and that was just, it was disappointing. It was a slog to get through. It has one of the worst final bosses in a long, long time. You have to fight that dude like 5 times, and there was literally in the final level, I shouted, "This is boring." I shouted at the television, "This is boring." And I never do that. I never like get it animated. And yet I was making a fool of myself in my own home.
But how
because
many,
it was mind numbing.
How many, that's the thing, mind numbing. It's stodgy. Like, it was why you abandoned Far Cry 6. Like,
yeah.
We played these games a million times. And when it's just, here's a bunch of stuff for like 100 hours. I'm going to roll my most disappointing in here as well, because it is Ghostwire Tokyo. And it just sucks because Ghostwire Tokyo has a great setup. And I love the prologue comic. I love anything about Supernatural. Natural detectives, and give me anything set in Japan. And so, like, it's just this great like idea of this whole underworld of demons and this idea of this person who's gone missing and trying to figure out whatever's going on with this sort of twisted demonic version of it starts in like Shinjuku and in Tokyo. But it's one of those stodgy Far Cry games where it's just go to this phone booth and hoover up a bunch of spirit tokens and then go do like all these just stodgy filler mission design that gets so far away from why you're there. Like, it has really good production values and really good looking characters. It's a game that had like 5 graphic settings on it. So I did spend 20 minutes going through all of them. But yeah, that's my one. It's just like, I never thought that was the game they were making.
Right.
In the run-up to launch, I thought it would be way more story-focused. And because it's Tango Gameworks of Evil Within fame, I just thought that it would be as focused as an Evil Within was, because the Evil Within series is still one of the most overlooked horror series of the last few years. So Ghostwire Tokyo, I just think there's a reason no one talks about it. And it's like, even for those of us who dove in, I haven't seen a single person talk about the story or finishing it or even barely even playing it. It's just a bunch of stodge.
Same with Dying Light, man. I think, not to speak for you, but the reason that these games go on like most disappointing rather than worst is because there are fun elements in there.
Yeah.
Like Dying Light 2 has one of the best drop kicks in video games. And it's infuriating that a game with a drop kick so good is so boring.
Yeah.
Because it's incredible. And it's like, if you could just like spread out that 5 second animation of pure joy into a full game, you would have had something. But instead, that's all I've got. 5 seconds of a good drop kick in a 30-hour game.
Ghostwire Tokyo has this cool thing where you're sort of pulling demonic cores out of the demons to kill them, and so you have different strands that come out of your fingers, so you're twisting it around, kind of like that old art form where people twist wool and stuff. It's a thing. I've seen do it in movies and TV shows, and you do that, but then it's the same animation every time you're going to kill something. And it just becomes this repetitive, like I said, it's this stodge of game design that should just work. But I've seen the like people who have got a bit further in the story on the Ghostwire Tokyo Reddit have said that it kind of does just devolve over time anyway, that it does feel like it was at some point they just severed the development and just kind of got it out there.
Right.
And what is there is polished enough, but it's very much bloated. And I feel like that's maybe just the case, that it was one of those things where the Bethesda deal went through and it was like, okay, we don't need to bother with this PlayStation exclusive anymore. Let's just get it out. Maybe the one who is Horizon, which to be super quick on that, is not necessarily an overarching most disappointing game, but it's a lot of game and hardly any story, and I feel like they focus on this thing that wasn't the most interesting part of Horizon, which was all about the mystery and what was going on under the world itself and everything. And Forbidden West is just, it's fine, it's solid. I can spend time in it, but I just sort of played it going like, yeah, every bit of this is expected, and it didn't have as many twists and turns as the original one did. And I think me and Josh did a video on its biggest missed opportunity, which is one of the things that could have been one of the coolest reveals, that instead is just a big old wet fart. So I'll put Horizon in there too as just a kind of another sort of, here's a bunch of content game that just feels very aimless. And I don't think that they nailed the beats of the original in a good enough way to continue that franchise. We can pivot though into most underrated / hidden gems, which is to say that James Dowse loves a bit of the old Pac-Man museum.
I think I do.
I think you do.
So my...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How do I phrase this? My fetish with gaming.
Interesting.
You had just a gobble gobble.
Yeah.
I adore rubbish arcade games. I don't mean rubbish as in terrible. I mean like just games that I can just turn my head off. And just like Tetris 99 I've been playing recently.
Okay.
I can just turn my mind off and just play it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the Pac-Mans, you got the Trials games, for example.
Yes.
That's another one, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Ish. But either way, so I've been playing Pac-Man a lot because it's on Game Pass. And if you ignore the input lag, which is a massive issue, it's actually quite a lot of fun just going through all these Pac-Man games. And it's just like, this is just fun.
Also, right. Is the whole thing like it's an archive of all of them in a row?
There's like 20 years. No, probably about 15 or so Pac-Man games. Oh. Just infinite Pac-Man.
As a Pac-Man novice, right? Yep. What differentiates all those Pac-Man games, and how does that remain fun, James Dowse, for the full duration?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you, Josh. Basically, you play as a 3D Pac-Man going around an arcade.
Okay.
And you just go up to an arcade machine and play Pac-Man.
Gobble, gobble. Like,
there's no fancy to it. You took about 10 minutes to make this game.
I'm so confused as to what this is. So you play as Pac-Man in a museum of Pac-Man games.
Yes.
Like, that's a menu, I would say.
Interesting.
Yes,
but like, what differentiates those Pac-Man games? Because I know nothing, Josh, apart from the original. Yeah. But like, are they different levels? Are like the different styles of game?
No. You play Batman 1, then Batman 2, and then you play Batman 3. All the way up to Batman 2, 5, 6, I think it's called.
A lot of Batman. The Championship Edition won't be included in here, is it, though?
Yes.
It is.
That is by far the best Pac-Man. I don't know. I'm not playing Pac-Man Museum.
That's why it is my underrated one, because that's one of my favorite games ever.
Yes, Pac-Man Championship Edition is genuinely brilliant. Yes.
Though it's not Championship Edition 2's not in there.
Good, because that one was a bit worse.
Was it?
I thought so.
I can't remember.
That one was really good. Josh, go play Championship Edition.
I'm not going to do that.
Remember when Terrace Effect came out and me and Rich were like, go play Terrace Effect, because it's like a dinosaur game and it's cool again.
Yeah,
nice little saddle on that dinosaur.
The difference is, like, I used to actually like playing Tetris,
but
Pac-Man was never for me, because I don't like those little ghost boys.
They're frightening, to be fair.
Inky and Blinky and Pokey. Timothy 2.
Those are witness protection names, I think.
They might be. And speaking of other underrated / hidden gems, I'm throwing... This is my bread and butter. This indie stuff, it's always going to be my bread and butter. So I'm not take too long. Although, actually, no, let's do yours, Josh, because I've talked a hell of a lot. Yours most underrated and hidden gem is Evil Dead the Game.
Evil is also Pac-Man.
Next year it's going to be Pac-Man, the Museum Collection 2. Well, they will have Championship 2 in there. Evil Dead the Game was something that I was looking forward to a lot, but was also a little trepidatious about, because it didn't get much buzz at all. It didn't have any reviews before it came out, and asymmetrical multiplayer games aren't really for me. I don't know if you know what this game is, James Dowse, but essentially... You play as four heroes from the Evil Dead franchise, and another player, or in AI if you want, plays as a demon who essentially tries to stop the survivors from getting to the end of the level, completing their objectives. So they can spawn in monsters, they can spawn in traps, they can control monsters to try and take all of the survivors down. And it was just so much fun, and so much more fun than I expected it to be, because I didn't play this with like friends, I just played it with strangers, which I thought would be a nightmare. But it's like straightforward enough that you can stick together and you don't have to do like loads of communication. It can be quite casual if you want. It's a great love letter to the Evil Dead franchise, if you like that series, which I definitely do. A lot of deep cuts in terms of the characters and the lore and some of the weapons and what have you. And ultimately, it's just like way more satisfying than I thought it would be to play. Like, it's gory as hell when you get like these finishes. The shooting is cool. The like loop of looting and then completing the objectives is fun. And playing as the demon is great if you want to grief people. So I'm excited about this as like a starting point, and I want the developers to like commit to releasing content for it as the years go on.
Because it's not Illphonic that made this, but like it feels like this is becoming like a little genre for slasher stuff, or like a genre for horror stuff, because you've got the Predator game, the Friday the 13th game, and now this. And as someone who discovered Friday the 13th this year, I love this stuff. I like the whole approach of this thing. And I think that if you get the right kind of, you can play with a bunch of people in person. I think that's a really fun energy as a good way to play like a horror game like this. But there's something about either playing as one of the survivors or playing as the demons, and it all being controlled by real people, that I think does really bring it to life and make it work. I can't speak for Evil Dead stuff myself, but it sounds like each one of these games has nailed the fan side.
Definitely.
Predator had tons of really cool skins, same with the Friday the 13th stuff. And it seems like Evil Dead's kind of another one of them in the best way.
I think they've been lucky so far in that none of them, at least to my recollection, has felt like it's exploiting the property.
No.
It feels like it's actually made by fans, unlike like Square Enix's Avengers.
Hey.
Sorry to drop that in yet again.
Yes.
But like each one of these horror games just kind of feels like it's created by people who are passionate about it. Like Evil Dead the game like gets back old... voice actors to play the roles, even though they haven't played those roles in like 40 years or 30 years or whatever.
I'm assuming Bruce Campbell
is
stuff, yeah.
Absolutely front and center. He plays like four versions of Ash. He's like, nice. he's there. He can be whichever version of Bruce Campbell you want to play. But yeah, it makes me excited for stuff like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like that's getting
another
version of this next year, I think. Mm-hmm.
So Dead by Daylight as well. Yeah, similar thing.
Obviously, all the stuff in Dead by Daylight.
To be honest, that's probably why, isn't it? Because that's the oldest one of these.
Paul
Rowland.
Because Dead by Daylight started introducing all of like the licensed horror heroes and villains, and then I think people were like, well, we could just make like individual games. They can be more than DLC. People seem to like this stuff.
But yeah, overall, the Evil Dead game, like you said, didn't get any coverage beforehand. Then it wasn't until you actually just on release day bought it and went, it's actually pretty good. That it was like, oh, okay, like it is worthwhile overall.
You are the marketing for that game.
Pretty much.
I hadn't heard of it before you mentioned it.
Yeah. And hey, you've done more speaking on these podcasts than I guess most of their marketing department did before release. My underrated stuff, like I said, is my bread and butter. I'll quickly shout out a few. One is Card Shark, which is a game about this European traveler from the 1700s called Saint-Germain. He was also the... Blew my mind, right? The same character that's in Castlevania. There's a Castlevania character called Saint-Germain who's a European sort of, I don't know, vagabond type dude, voiced by Bill Nye in the anime.
No way.
I know, he's brilliant. Really cool, sort of mysterious, suave man. Card Shark is an indie game, sort of about like a roving band of traveling magicians, and Saint-Germain joins up with them. And in the game, you're doing various like card tricks to sort of get money from people and scam people and stuff. But the game teaches you the actual card tricks as you learn them in the game. So like in real life, you can learn how to do these tricks, and they're really cool. Like I've only done two so far, from the very beginning, but I just love that setup and the art direction for it is really, really cool. The art design, and it's written very well. And I think the story overall has more to it than just the card stuff. But I think that game is really, really cool. It's only been out for a few weeks, but there's been a desert demo you can play as well. Windjammers 2, super solid follow up to the original one. Brilliant one-on-one versus game. I got the wrestling lads on that. Cedric versus Hamlet. I think Hamlet won. I don't remember anymore, but that was a very good time. Ollie World, perfect encapsulation of everything that the first two games were going for. And if you want an alternative skateboarding game, like it's more side-scrolling in terms of the camera perspective and everything, I just think that game is like a full package. Like the soundtrack is phenomenal, which has very much been the soundtrack to my year so far. Yeah. Lots of chill hop stuff, lots of chill synth stuff. But the mechanics are so tight and they roll them out sequentially so you get it over time. And my last one is Slipstream, which is a game very like Outrun or those old school, what was the name of blast processing style racers from the 90s? Now that stuff was made up as a term. But you know what I mean? Like it's like 3D environment, 2D car sprite, just burning around corners at a million mile an hour. Right. Slipstream is very much a love letter to that period in gaming. And the music's brilliant. Again, synthwave soundtrack, of course, because it's me. But still, next thing is the best gaming moments of the year. Now, hilariously, beautifully, poetically, both of you have the same thing, which is beating the final boss in Elden Ring with each other.
Together.
In Elden Ring, beating the Elden Beast. So either one of you want to take that, the beautiful time that was.
Well, I don't want to take away from James Dowse's actual victory, so I'm going to hand it over to him for this.
You can add in whenever you feel like you need
Thank
to add
you,
in.
Thank you, mate.
So I was struggling with the Elden Beast boss for what, a week was it? I think it was. Well, a week or two at this point, I was struggling.
I tried beaming in, but me, I was underleveled, couldn't do a thing.
Yeah, you
couldn't do a thing.
You tried your best, but you'd not had enough. And then I thought I'd message Josh, and then Josh came in. And you, I think it was about two or three times you came in, and every time we got so close.
Yeah.
And there was one time where it was a slither, a centimetre of a health on that boss. And I, oh my God, I screamed and I shouted and I put my head in a pillow and cried.
I need to explain that moment as well, because it was so guttering. Like, it was such a battle of attrition. We'd been on that run for ages. Like, none of us had any healing items. And there is this one move that the Elden Beast does at range where it hits you with like a bunch of arcs of light, and I think it throws three at you.
Yep.
It's the one move that I had down. Like, I could dodge that every time. And I was just thinking, we were going in for one final strike on the beast. It had literally no health on the bar.
Because
like,
I died, and I had you guys on voice chat. So yes. I was just listening, going like, they're on the crystal maze, you're on the other side of the wall. It's like, are you doing okay? Yes. Are you guys okay?
So when it went to do this final attack, I was like, right, just go for me. Because one, if I die, it's fine. I disconnect. And two, I have this attack down. Please go for me. It didn't go for me. It went for James Dowse. And I got the finishing blow, but because James Dowse had died, the sacrifice meant nothing. Gosh. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I was so upset. But
you still
there.
Got the audio of you.
I've got it. I need to post that on Twitter. When this goes live, I'll post it. Because, oh my God. And I kept trying all night after you left. And I was like, Josh, man, I need you back.
Yeah.
So like 9 p.m. on a Friday night, Josh Brown comes back. I'm ready. So we just went, he did it and that was it. And then I just rinsed it in the New Game Plus twice.
It was just that. Like,
but that moment was something else.
Yeah, because it became like a real kind of job. Like we were playing it like on lunch breaks, which is why we had to stop eventually. You know, we were playing it on lunch breaks. We were playing it on a Friday night. And I remember like turning to my girlfriend and I was like, like, I'm not going to be there for tea tonight. Jim's house needs my help.
Duty calls. I've got stuff to do.
Duty calls. And it was just such a satisfying moment because, like, it's what I love about Elden Ring's kind of like post game or end game, I guess you would describe it as, when you're helping other people, is that it scales the difficulty to whoever you're beaming in with. So it's like you can't be a high level character and come in and just trounce the boss. Like you still need to try. So it's still a challenge. And if anything, it's more of a challenge and certainly a different style of challenge when you're juggling two other people or one other person who you're trying to keep alive. And it was just like, it was thrilling to like do that fight with both of you guys and kind of be there for that.
Because I was painfully underleveled for the back third of Elden Ring. Like I fought the fire giant 50 levels below what you were. God, like that's why it took me 50 odd tries to do it, like almost literally. So when I was beaming, I was like, I'll beam in and help James out. This is fine. And then just got absolutely thwomped. Like we got to the Elden Beast, but I just couldn't survive against any of the splash damage stuff. Or just getting tagged by anything. And well, then
there was the boss with you where it was the dragon, wasn't it, in the windy area at the end.
Placida Sax or whatever it's whatever called.
That's it, man.
Yeah. Me and Josh came in for that one.
Yes.
And helps you out for that.
But yes, that was great too.
I think that was the final one we all did together.
It was. Yes,
that was my last trophy.
Completing it,
Yeah,
that's a magical time.
It was great.
Yeah.
And that's why it can't be anything else for Game of the Year.
No.
Like, those memories are just...
Yeah, and I think they're sort of made that much more magical or awesome because that world is so huge. And it's like, okay, beam in and help me in this spot. And you're sort of like, you set the little point for people to help you and then you're waiting for everyone to arrive. And it's like, yeah, those moments are like magical. They're they're elevated by everything else. speaking of being elevated by everything else, my gaming moment is just playing AEW and WWE 2K22. This year is when I rediscovered my love for wrestling. It's been 20 whatever it is years. It's been a long time. I don't know if either of you guys, I know Josh was, or Mr. James Stiles, were you in the wrestling boom of early 2000s?
Don't know what that is.
Good stuff. There was a whole thing when WWF was flying back in the day, when everybody, quote unquote everybody, used to watch wrestling. Everyone knew their Stone Colds and their Rocks and Triple H's and whatever. And then wrestling got a bit naff and it got a bit embarrassing and it got a bit terrible. And so a lot of people just went, I'm all right. I don't need this. And a lot of people stuck with it, whatever. But like people like me, the wider sort of like fair weather fan who used to bleed it back in the day, but gave up on it, just sort of didn't bother. And then in real life, dude called CM Punk, who was a big old deal in wrestling, came across and like helped sort of propel AEW, which is a new wrestling organization, to do stuff, and they have a game coming out, but because of just how varied the customization suite is in the official WWE game, and the fact that they actually made a good WWE game, or a good wrestling game, for the first time in I don't even know how long, 10 years, the 2K games have been a laughingstock for so long, that combination of stuff, using this incredible customization suite, which just lets you make all the people that you want to make from the rival company, even the devs, which is like, must be such a weird contract dispute thing, have put in the official animations for the entrance of the wrestlers that aren't on the roster but are from their rival company. They're just called something else. Like you can just play as like, you know, I think Kenny Omega, who's like a big deal in AEW, his entrance is in the wrestling game, but it's called like the Omega One or something because those names wouldn't be copyright. But overall, it was just that thing of like, I haven't played a wrestling game since like SmackDown versus Raw 2007 or something, because I kept going with the games after wrestling was terrible. And just doing all that, I was like, I can download the rings, I can download the superstars, I can get all their special moves, I can do all this stuff, and just sit in there like a little weirdo, just going like, this is the best thing in the world. So I'm still loving the wrestling, and I'm loving AEW inside WWE 2K22. I've not done a single WWE match in that game. Why would I? I don't need that roster whatsoever. Other than some of the people that came across the AEW who were in WWE, you can just use their character models. But yeah, that was my thing. We should pivot into the final stuff, which is the most anticipated for the rest of the year. Josh Brown, you said Lord of the Rings Gollum. Lord of the Rings Gollum.
Not only the most anticipated game of this year, but I would argue the most anticipated game of any year. Who isn't looking forward to this title, my friend?
Every time they show this game, it just doesn't... I should clarify, this isn't your actual pick.
Internally.
I think it is.
Your spirit animal is maybe Gollum. But yeah, every time they show that game off, it looks worse.
Which is why
which is why
it's my most anticipated game of the year, because like, who knows what this thing is going to be.
That's the thing, considering how weirdly Modern Warfare 2 has been shown. Yeah. Is there a world where Lord of the Rings Gollum lands better than Modern Warfare 2?
Genuinely, maybe. Like, that's my real most anticipated game of the year, if I have to choose a proper one. But yeah, like, Modern Warfare is only my most anticipated game of 2022, by default at this point. And it's because of how much I love the previous game rather than what I have seen. Mm. So yeah, there absolutely is a world, genuinely, I'm speaking properly now, where Modern Warfare 2 comes out and it's disappointing, and Lord of the Rings Gollum comes out and it is great. Who knows?
Part of me would like that reality to come true, just for the sake of the sheer surprise of it. But yeah, Modern Warfare 2 obviously had a bit of a mixed reception to some of the gameplay they've shown off. Obviously there's always the undercurrent of it's more Call of Duty, but we'll see how that game kind of comes together. It's following on the most well-received game in quite some time with the original one. Mr. James Dalsh, your most anticipated game is Stray. Yes, what a pick.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
I adore that kind of art style, what was it called? Ghost Runner.
Yes. Cyberpunk.
And Cyberpunk, obviously, Cyberpunk. But like that, just playing as a cat going around a world that's full of robots and stuff and like lick yourself and all that kind of... Mate, it's crazy. Like, the possibilities in that game will be endless.
Did you play A Dog's Life on PlayStation 2?
Oh my gosh. Every single week in the Choose Your Own Adventure videos, I always put a clip of Dog's Life in it, just to take the mick, because nobody knows what game that is, other than to entertain myself.
You should. A Dog's Life on PlayStation 2, which I've just realised, I can get that on the Steam Deck.
Yeah, you can.
I'm getting that when I go back upstairs. But that whole game, like, why is there not any more animal protagonists? In literal animal protagonists, not animal in clothes. I mean, like an actual dog.
Yeah. This is where I agree.
Sonic doesn't have clothes.
No. He's Give me a realistic hedgehog game. Where's that? Where is that?
That would be... what I would love is the hedgehog game, but you play as the hedgehogs from the UK adverts.
Who teach you across the road, yeah.
Who teach you across the road, and you have to get across the road.
But they have little raincoats on.
Being squished.
Little umbrellas.
Only when it rains, though, surely. They got high vises on.
That
makes it too easy. That's the easy mode.
That's true. That's DLC attire. Yeah. That's for the deluxe version.
Can a pig wear clothes?
Again, not a realistic animal.
It's a pig.
It's not a pig. She's barely a pig. Give me an actual pig simulator.
Give me a real pig.
And I'm back in. I mean, give me that. But I don't know what we were saying.
So yeah, Dog's Life, great game. Yes. But Stray is absolutely something I'm very much looking forward to.
Mm.
I just want to play as a cat in a cyberpunk world.
I am so curious how open that game is, because every time they show it, they show the city, but they show a very specific corridor, a very specific pathing that the cat is taking throughout it. And it seems like the cat or you as the player are responding to certain contextual prompts that make you jump up in certain ways. I'm yet to really see it open up. They've sort of shown the backpack that you have on. Cat with the backpack is making me laugh, but you sort of like you bank like a hack, and then you can walk up to a certain thing in the world, you can use that hack, and you go to the next thing. I do want the cat simulation game, and so I wonder how on rails it's going to be and how story focused it's going
to
be.
Do you want me to change my pick to Goat Simulator 3?
No, I want you to live your best life, but I'm very curious what Stray will be.
Before we move on, could I ask a question to the floor? Sonic, authorities.
Do you want to do Josh's Sonic question of the week?
I can do. This is going to be the question every week. Have we ever in canon seen Sonic's feet?
No.
Are they hooves like they look like?
Hooves?
Yeah, it's like shoes are like big rounded hooves, aren't they? They kind of look like hooves.
No. That's just it's like Sora off Kingdom Hearts' shoes, just big.
Clown feet. Yeah. Does Sonic have toes? Is the question I'm asking right now. Have we seen them?
Oh, I don't know if he has little.
Have you dreamt them?
He has little toenails, though. He has little three little claws.
Is that true? Well, this is what I'm asking.
Hedgehogs have toes?
I don't know.
I guess they kind of do.
When he turns into that werebeast, he has claws.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Does he take his shoes off then?
Well, that's why I'm asking the authorities.
I think he does, but he has very, furry feet.
How's about our audience sends you pictures of Sonic with, his feet out?
Please send them to my...
Okay, he maintains his feet when he's the werehog. So, no one, no one's ever seen Sonic's feet.
That's outrageous, man.
He's always got his little shoes on.
I suppose he wouldn't want to do that for free anywhere.
No, that's the thing. Those shoes cost a lot to get in. They're Michael Jackson shoes, so he's not going to throw them away.
Was it the 35th anniversary this year?
Of Sonic?
Yeah.
Was it
the 30th?
31st.
Okay, 35th, he'll get his feet out.
Have they ever done a gag where you see Sonic's closet and it's just loads and loads of the same shoes over and over again?
I don't think he ever changes.
He must burn the soles out on those things out quite quickly.
Possibly.
Maybe they are his feet.
That would be good.
Well, if I can cite Sonic Canon in the original Sonic the Hedgehog comics, where he's originally a brown hedgehog and he undergoes the medical sort of scientific procedure from Dr. Ivo Kintobar before he's Robotnik, he fuses with the shoes. He gives him specially designed science shoes.
Right.
He says the new speeds you'll be doing, you're going to need these shoes. And so like that's when he becomes blue because he runs so fast and he sort of has these shoes on. And then at the same time, there's an explosion, and Dr. Ivo Kinterbar merges with an egg. Does and he? Then he becomes Eggman. And then Sonic calls him Eggman, and he's like, oh, my name's Robotnik. And then that's canon.
This is why I came to you two. Thanks so much for this.
Yeah, Sonic that was, comics. That
was well done, man.
That's the lore. I think I did a video about that.
You might have.
I think there's a video.
We'll do another.
I think somewhere on the channel is me discovering that years ago and going, I need to make a video about
it. If you did that, like in ASMR and recorded it, I would listen to that every night. You didn't do that in the recall, did you?
I'm gonna wee myself, Scott. Stop it.
Stop weeing yourself, James Tass. So most anticipated stuff, Lord of the Rings, Skull and Modern Warfare 2 and Stray. My two picks are Callisto Protocol. Because there's nothing better than what's being shown off. Callisto Protocol looks like just such an immaculate looking game, to be honest. And we talked about it a lot on the various podcasts since. These streams have gone down. So I will throw in my other two, which are Midnight Fight Express, made by one dude. I need to look up this guy's name because it's developed by one guy. And I finally played Midnight Fight Express on my Steam Deck because I'm a PC's man now. Yeah. I can spell it and everything. So PC, I got the demo for it. And that game, I don't think it's written very well. I think it's written to be badass and it comes across quite cringe. But it does play incredibly well with a soundtrack by Noise Cream. Phenomenal synthwave artist. But yeah, that game, super, really, really cool 3D brawler with insane weight to everything you do. And you can just hold one of the shoulder buttons and just do a suplex whenever you want.
Nice.
Just sort of do a finisher whenever you want. Throw in different parts of the environment to people. It's kind of my dream game. And my only other one is Season, which is a game about a sort of traveler that's putting together. I think the point of the game is putting together a song based on recording different things they come across, whether it be the flap of a butterfly's wings or whatever. But that game looks gorgeous. It's got a sort of extended look across the last few days. So those would be mine. So collectively, it's whatever I just said. Plus, Close to Protocol, Midnight Fight Express, and Season.
Why did you not say Sonic Frontiers?
Because that game looks horrendous, James. Yeah,
does he get his shoes off?
He's not going to ever get his shoes off, Josh.
Not even in Sonic Frontiers.
I think if he got his shoes off,
his that would feet be... are the new frontier.
I mean, maybe eventually. Maybe. No one even knows why that game's called. Do you know, have you seen the plot for that, James Stiles?
No.
He's lost his mind.
Lost his plot.
He's amnesia. He's got amnesia. He's amnesia.
He's amnesia.
Sonic the Amnesia.
So he's woke up in this unreal.
He's lost his mind, marbles, whatever you call it, and he's waking up in this other land, and the whole point of the game is that he has to go around and try and find Amy, Tails, Knuckles. It's kind of Sonic Generations, I guess. But like that's how they're justifying the world is empty and we don't know what's going on, and that's why he's not looking for anyone. Or he doesn't know what's going on, and he's punching and kicking now, or whatever he's doing.
You'd freak out if you just woke up one day and you were Sonic the Hedgehog. You had no idea how. You'd be like, where do these shoes come from?
Can't take your shoelaces off.
You in these shoes. We will see what state Sonic Frontiers lands in later in the year, but it's
hopefully he lands on his feet.
With that, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by James Tout.
Oh, cheers, mate. Thank you.
And Josh Brown.
Oh, goodbye.
I will catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.